Saturday on 5AA after 9 this morning with Leon Biner. Should be a good chat. 23 past 12 and the open line is 8223 0000. Let's talk to one of our friends of the show. It's Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, Jeff. How you going?
I'm all right.
Yeah, it's good.
Craig, what's your take on the banning the burqa thing?
I think, Jeff, it's just a matter of trying. It's just playing on people's fears of the unknown. I mean, I live in Coburg, you know, here in Victoria. I mean, this is the home of the Islamic schools. It's the home of the Islamic community. There's a lot of Muslims walk up and down the street every day. There's Italians. There's Greeks. It's not an issue. It's absolutely a non-issue, but it's played up by politicians and those who want to make a quick point or win over quick support on the basis of fear. And as far as, I mean, come on, listen, you can wear stockings or, helmets or, balaclavas into banks. I mean, if you're going to rob a bank, you're going to use something. And just to have one incident that I can remember of someone going with a burqa is not the issue.
Do you think, I mean, it sounds like a bit of a melting pot where you live. Like, does that still, see, people say that doesn't feel like Australia to me. There's not enough white people. Does that still feel like Australia to you?
It does. People come here because of our way of life, and they bring their religion, they bring their way of life, and we enjoy that. We enjoy the Turkish food, we enjoy the Chinese food, the Italian food, the Greek food. When third people first come, of course, they bring the old culture with them that gets integrated. And then you end up with first and second generations that both have the benefit of living in our great country, as well as bringing some of the cultural aspects of their own countries with them. And that makes us richer. I just think that we have to have a much more clearly defined national mission as a people. I've talked to you about this on your show before about a really large scale infrastructure development so that we can actually populate this place and stop having people all crowding into the cities. Mm. And the gentleman I think I heard on the internet before complaining about there not being any houses for Australians, well, that's become a real problem because you've got overseas investment coming in into the domestic market. You're getting speculation in housing.
Oh, he's talking about social housing more than anything.
Oh, is he? Okay, well, there's still 45,000 houses here in Melbourne, Jeff, that are empty that people are just sitting on because of the rising residential values.
Wow.
45,000. Yes, if all those came onto the market, the prices wouldn't be anywhere near as high as they were.
That's amazing.
Right, and I think, we actually have to open this country up. We're empty, actually. 2.9 people per square kilometre. If we had high-speed rail, like a ring rail proposal, like I've talked about, develop the inside of our country, develop our water capacity, have policies that actually develop new farming areas. I mean, I've seen many reports that the north of Australia could have up to 100 million people.
Now, what about the surveys? I mean, they do survey after survey, and you can even see that the sort of backlash that Kevin Rudd copped when he said he wanted a big Australia. Most people in Australia don't want any more people. It's not a political thing. The people don't want it.
Well, the people don't want it because we've had 40 years of economic development, economic rationalism, Jeff, and globalisation. And the problem what people feel is actually correct. I mean, there is congestion in the cities. They're not getting the hospital services. The water supply is being privatised and they're paying more for water. That's all happening. But it's not because there's too many people. It's because we haven't developed anything in 40 years. Nothing serious in terms of an economic development project for the country.
Mm. Now, let's talk about the latest press release you've come out with, which is very eye-catching. According to the Citizens Electoral Council, the Anglican Church have put out a call for human genocide, which is a fairly big call, Craig. You need to explain.
Well, it's based on a newspaper article that came out yesterday in The Age, where The Age, big bold letters, says, "Thou shalt not breed Anglicans." And it's coming out saying that the Anglican Church is publicly coming out endorsing a guy by the name of Kelvin Thompson, who said that Australia shouldn't have any more than 26 million people.
Right.
Now, behind that, Kelvin Thompson is the poster boy for what's called the Sustainable Population, the SPA, Sustainable Population Association, which is basically a front group for the Australian Conservation Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they came out a couple of weeks back and basically said that population growth should be treated as a noxious pest, just like cane toads and feral cats. Again, look, this is an ideological fight. It's based around old ideas that go way back, actually, to people like Parson Thomas Malthus back in the 17th century. employed by the British East India Company, which is the forerunners for globalization today. You have two versions of two ideas of human beings. Either human beings are created, what you call, in the image of the Creator, we're endowed with creative reason. So when you look at your kids and you see them, you know, making discoveries and, you know, getting excited about actually their mind working creatively, if that's fostered by a government and the principle of the general welfare is encouraged that you give people the best health care, the best education, then you actually increase the powers of discovery of the human mind, which makes us completely separate to animals. Now, there's a different view of mankind, which is the old idea of empire, and it goes way back, 10,000 years or so, where people are divided up into classes of where you have the so-called rulers, and then you have those to be ruled. Now, those to be ruled are treated basically as animals. And we
People do look for leadership, though. You need look. People may not like it, especially if you're the being ruled mob. But you need the obscenely rich to build the massive businesses to create the jobs that everyone else works at. Like you can't actually have a flat line model without you need a pyramid. It's the only way it works.
Well, you need to have leadership and the structure for that. Is actually the nation state, Jeff, because the idea of empire I was mentioned before, which reduces people down to mere, the idea is literally that people are beasts.
That's an attitude, though. You can be a beast if you want.
That's right. It's an ideology. That means that people are no better than a kangaroo or an emu or anything else that needs to be told.
No one can make you feel that. Like, if you feel you're a cog in the wheel, no one's making you do that except for yourself. Well, no one can make you feel that.
Well, the point, though, is the intention of those that rule, like Prince Philip and others.
See, I don't... explain that. Like, how does anyone make anyone feel like they're a lump of meat to be played with for someone else's benefit?
Well, when you have a situation in healthcare and you're looking for actually decent healthcare within the system that we have today, and you go to a hospital and the hospital's crowded and you can't get in, and you die on that trolley, questions get asked, well, why is this going on? And people then start to question the values of their government.
Yeah, that's an inefficient healthcare system and funding, and you can talk about that. I don't call that a subversive policy to keep people in their place, though, by making sure that if you're not wealthy enough, you die on a trolley. Like, that's a huge ideological...
Yeah, I know, but see, one of the ways that you subjugate people too, Jeff, is you fail to give them a decent education, or you fail to give them a system where they can challenge the powers.
Yeah, but you know the main thing that's failing in this country, Craig, isn't government. It's families. That's what's letting people down. People who aren't investing in their own children, who fail to check whether their kids are who can read or whether they're doing their homework or not. I think schools are actually doing fine. Parents.
Jeff, coming back to the point I was making before, we've had 40 years of globalisation.
That's got nothing to do with it, Craig. What's globalisation got to do with families?
No, hang on. If you've got two parents that are working all the time, right, all the time, in order to try and pay the mortgage to bring their kids up, and this is a characteristic across the entire country, because of the way the actual physical economy has collapsed over the last 40 years, actually collapsed, then what you're looking at is a social changes that take place within families. People don't have the time to put into their families they used to.
They now, do if they want. They do if they want, Craig.
That's right. Some do and some don't. And that's the characteristic across the entire society. Now, the point, though, is the intention is that you either have a promotion of nation states, right, where you don't allow this monetarist economy that we have now associated globalization to dictate the physical circumstances of your economy, right? Like you were talking about large corporations.
So tell me, in a new world order, how this nation state will save people from their life of drudgery and having to work.
All right, take an actual concrete example right now of, say, Greece, where you've now just had a $1 trillion.
Let's talk about Australia.
No, I see Australia is intimately tied to the same idea.
Well, let's not go for the worst case scenario. Let's go for a real world, you and me, that we can relate to.
Well, I'm talking about a real world.
Working families in Australia.
Well, so the working family, we're just a little bit behind in the lag because in Greece, for example, right? You've got cuts to pays and working standards by 30%, cuts to pensions. Now, people say...
Well, they've been overpaid for decades.
No, they haven't been.
By European standards, they have.
But, no, Jeff, this is going to be austerity across the board in Europe. This is the policy because there's a $5 trillion debt bubble in Europe. Now, people say, what's that got to do with Australia? We're okay, Jack. No worries about us. Well, I mentioned to you before on this show that something like $850 billion of the debt that we have, the $1 trillion debt, which is a huge amount of debt for 20 million people, is owned by the Australian banks.
Well, let's get back to what we're talking about in terms of mum and dad, and they're working 80 hours a week and falling behind in looking after their kids.
Yeah.
How is a nation state going to turn that around?
Well, you have to eliminate this factor of monetarism or globalisation.
I don't understand. Like, how does it...
I know what you mean. Because, look, the point is right now, you take this issue of what's happening with the wealth in this country, actually. Rio Tinto, 70% of the profits leave and go overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Same with BHP, it's about 40%. Now, some of that money's plowed back in terms of wages, and some of it goes, about 10% of it in the resource sector goes back into superannuation, but a majority of it goes out overseas. Back in the 70s, there was a proposal by Whitlam to nationalise and to own those companies. So the raw materials that we actually dig out of the ground, the value of that goes to the population.
What about that whopping great tax that they've proposed?
Well, that's just a part way of getting there, but I'm not even convinced that's going to affect the revenue is very much at all yet. I mean, we still haven't got to the bottom of what's going on. There's a fair bit of smoke and mirrors. But with Australians owning their resource companies, we can then value add that, create more steel mills to create more value added steel. We don't produce any aluminium in this country, actually aluminium metal. We produce the aluminum, we export it, then we bring back all the aluminium.
Oh, we're very silly, I agree, but I still don't understand how a fundamental shift on a macro level is going to affect everybody's life and make us feel better in a work-life balance scenario.
Because at the moment, Australia's debt levels right now are huge. We're living on credit and we're living on debt.
That doesn't affect me. How does that affect me?
Well, at the moment, it hasn't burst. But when, for example, there is a complete breakdown of the system, which is coming in Europe, right, because of the amount of debt. This thing that they've just done is a complete waste of time. It's not going to work. But what we're proposing internationally is it'd be a Glass-Steagall, what's called Glass-Steagall. It's based on legislation that went through in the 1930s, where you say, okay, look, there's so much crap in the system. There's so much debt. There's so much paper. It can never be paid. Don't try and pay this by cutting pensions and cutting the welfare benefits and placing extra taxes on the existing companies that are in Europe, for example, to pay this, which is what's happening right now, write the debt off. It's all speculative. And go back to the idea of nation states with sovereign national banks, credit, and you go back and you redevelop actual physical economic physical infrastructure, and you rebuild the physical economies.
I feel like I'm having that John Hewson chat about the GST and the birthday cake. All I'm looking for is a clear example of how a new system is going to make people's lives better.
Because the commitment or the intention, Jeff, is not to loop people through the monetary system to make money. Money is no value whatsoever. It's what at the end of the day, our people...
What do you mean by that? Like, to take people out of a monetary... What are we going to barter coconuts?
Well, right now, most of what we import, most of the goods we get in the supermarket, most of the goods we get in the hardware store are all imported from China. We don't make much in this country,
That's crazy too, but how does that...
But the point is, that is a result of the current policy. If China disappears and those goods get cut off, what is the standard of living going to be for Australians like, right? It's going to mean we're going to have to remanufacture and redevelop certain goods that we don't produce right now, which is great. That's what we should be doing, right?
I agree.
Now, how are you going to do it? How are you going to fund that? You're not going to fund it by trying to borrow money overseas to do it when everyone else is potentially in a mess.
I think there'll be a lot of money to be made. Like, if China went belly up, you'd find there'd be a lot of hardware manufacturers going, cha-ching, thank you, hello, this is the golden goose.
Well, yeah, that's assuming you've still got the machine tool sector that actually makes the machine tools, Jeff, that actually makes the goods.
Well, we didn't have machine tools to build warships and planes before World War II came out. We turned those around pretty quickly.
That's right, we did do that.
In an emergency, you can do things pretty quickly when you need to. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
that's exactly what I'm saying, is that we're in a situation when an emergency is coming, and the policies are that we have to return to principles of national sovereignty and actually rebuild the industries that we've actually lost. Now, we can do that, but you're not going to do it in the current financial system the way it is now. And I think, you know, everything is perceived in Australia to be okay. And what I'm saying is it's not okay. If you have a catastrophic breakdown of the finances in Europe, where you have so much money overseas borrowed, $825 billion, which $425 of that is turned over every 90 days in our Australian banks, and they can't get the credit, you'll have a credit crunch far worse than we had in 2007.
When's it due, do you think?
When I can't predict these sorts of things. All you can see is they've just thrown another $1 trillion into the bubble to prop it up.
Now, Craig, I have to leave it there. If people want to find out more.
Yeah, look, Jeff, on the website, www.cecaust.com.au. As you know, there's a lot of material here. We can talk all night on this.
That's right. That's the thing. That's why we need to send people where they can find. And there's the number as well, 1-800-636-432.
That's right. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you, Craig. I'll catch you soon.
You're welcome.
Craig is, it's always a curly one. It's always fun. Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council, and hopefully we'll talk next week. The open line is 8223-0000.
Win the ultimate golden ticket to the 2010 Adelaide Cabaret Festival. You could see the song.